Don't you hate when people answer their own questions? I do.
So bad.
Oh, no. That's one of those things where it's like, you just fucking did it, you piece of shit.
Yes, exactly.
You're a fucking asshole.
You thought I was going to get angry over that.
I thought you were.
No, I'm good.
I think the delivery could have been better to piss you off.
Eh, it's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah, so...
Hi. Hi, guys. Hello.
It's Nikki.
And Tyler.
And this is Paige Turners.
And Button Mashers.
Shoulder popped.
Holy shit.
You okay?
Yeah, keep going. Oh my god.
It was loud enough to be recorded. Oh my god.
Holy shit.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
Episode 63.
Yep.
God. So how are you?
Breaking, apparently. Holy shit.
We're recording this 3 days away from our wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah, so woo. We'll be a married couple by the time you guys get to hear this. And I'm excited.
Me too.
I'm ready for it to be over. It's already wedding drama. And I'm like... For the people I expected the least.
Yeah.
It's okay, though. It'll get handled, and we'll get through it, and it'll be fine.
It's a bunch of bullshit is what it is.
Yep, Tyler's not fine. Anyway,
normal news.
I guess it was mostly that we're getting married and it'll be out by then. We still have that infinite timeline of a review for books kind of thing.
We should just do a thing where it's like, as soon as you review, you'll just get a book. Like, for the first, whatever, six people.
Sure, but I'll run out of books.
I said for the first six people.
I know, but I'll run out of books. Because then I'll be like, no, I have books for you.
Yeah, sure, here you go.
Here you go. You can't have a few copies of things, but yeah, sure, whatever. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
We will.
Anyway, this is going to be a long episode today.
From what it seems, yes.
Yeah, yes. We both... So I did a full book today.
And I did a full game.
Yep. That's normal, yeah. But I sometimes split up the book.
I know. I just wanted to be a little shit.
Of course you did.
Because I am not okay, so I feel like the needing to be a shit is...
Yeah, but don't do it to me.
Okay.
He's still going to be a little shit to me.
Yes.
It's fine. Mm-hmm. Oh, we also got a new computer.
Yeah.
It's working
faster speeds.
A lot smoother than the other one.
We also got a faster modem, so.
Yeah, we did. We got a brand new modem, and so everything's moving pretty smoothly.
Smoothly.
The only problem is it's like a Google Chrome computer, so I had to download Linux in order to get Audacity on here.
Which is weird, but we'll talk about that at a later date.
Yeah, I can bitch about it later. If this doesn't go well, I'll definitely bitch about it later.
Yes.
So, with that, do you want to get into my book?
Yes.
Okay.
What if I said no? Like, what if I just chose to...
Okay, guys, bye!
Yeah, deuces.
Shortest episode ever.
Yeah.
Comparatively to our longest episode, yikes.
Yeah.
Still yikes today's. So, this week, as promised, I brought another Gina Showalter, but a different series entirely, because as much as I loved the last series, I couldn't. It was too cluttered.
And yeah.
I realized how cluttered it was after the fact of reading it again, when my mind was not as cluttered.
Mm-hmm.
So, it made me almost... anxious written because it was just too much. So this one is one of the Lords of the Underworld because I really love that series.
All
and
right.
This is book number two. Can you guess who we're following?
No, Payne. Oh.
I mean, Payne would have been the most obvious one because he was attracted to the first person anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But one other person was actually attracted to someone there.
Okay.
Lucien.
Lucien!
Yeah, so this is the darkest kiss.
Mm.
Yeah, everything starts with the darkest, and then it's something that involves
wow,
them.
Wow, fancy.
Yeah. Fancy.
Fancy pants.
It's as if it was a series or something.
Yeah.
So the story begins with a prologue. It explains that the man we will be following has many names, but is more commonly known as Death.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't enjoy taking the lives of innocent people, but he had to do this job because of the gods that cursed him with this demon. Did his obedience mean that he was kind, gentle, or caring? No. But he doesn't feel those things. Rage, anger, and absolute frustration? Yes. Woe to the person who enraged him and the demon, who wasn't afraid to wrap its hands around the heart of someone and squeeze until it burst.
Ooh.
He has a short leash on the demon, and if you weren't careful, they would come for you.
Oh.
So now with that beautiful opening and butterfly dream-worthy thoughts, let's introduce you to Anya.
Anya.
Do you remember Anya from the last story?
Vaguely, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What do you remember of her?
I knew you were going to ask that as soon as I said yes. Not much, I'm going to be honest.
Okay. What do you know? No idea.
It's been a while.
So she is the goddess of anarchy, the daughter of lawlessness, and dealer of disorder.
Okay.
And at this point, she's at a club. Yes, she is a cocky son of a bitch, so you would love her.
Okay.
But I don't really portray that a lot in the notes. I just get down to the nitty gritty.
Ooh.
And sometimes it's more gritty than nitty. Anyway.
Oh.
So the lords of the underworld were present and causing all sorts of sexy chaos. Her words. Which.
Sexy chaos. All sorts of sexy chaos.
Yep. Went in deep. Which she wanted a hand in. Mostly with Lucian, the keeper of death.
Mm-hmm.
Before I dive super deep into her slight obsession with him, a little her story is kind of necessary. Anya was very hated by the gods because of her mother's promiscuity.
Mm-hmm.
So her time in Olympus was never good. So when the big bad Titans came, she decided to try and help her parents escape the pits of Tartarus. Didn't work though, and Cronus, the new Titan god, told her to give him her gift, or else he'll sick the lords of the underworld on her.
Mm.
Instead, she basically told him to fuck off by telling the lords about their plans, the proof now showing in cities raising from the seas despite news sources not finding out about them. She wanted to help them, and the moment she saw Lucian, she was definitely interested. With his blue and brown eyes, one each, and his constant complexity in character, she wanted to know every part of him, literally. Even with his body being covered in scars, she was entirely attracted to him.
You want to know how I got these scars?
Why did you say it like that? Like, no, I got these scars.
You want to know how I got these scars?
Oh my gosh.
What?
You. So in the middle of this...
Flawless impersonation.
Yes, it was. In the middle of this club and dance party, she finally was approached by Paris, keeper of promiscuity, and he offered to show her a good time. She countered-offered to cut off his hands and dick. She only wanted Lucian.
Ah.
He thought it was cute, and I was like, no.
Oh.
The good news, though, is that Paris's attention drew Lucian's. She kind of danced her way towards him and beckoned him to her, where she attempted to dance her way into his favor. And I'm talking... dirty dancing.
Ooh,
dirty dancing.
Grinding.
Yep. But it didn't work.
Grinding and moving.
Yep. She was literally grinding on the dude, but all he could do was say, no touching.
No.
The other men came to her location and claimed she was bait and even searched the premises. She tried one last time to seduce him, and he went from clearly wanting her to nearly smacking the shit out of her.
Nice.
He even threatened to strike her down.
Nope.
He's like, no.
Less nice.
She stopped and gaped at him like, what? She was so disappointed by this revelation. Yeah, she was only disappointed. That's it. She was afraid. She was like, what? I'm trying everything. She knew that men liked women who threw themselves at them, right? But he wasn't mortal, nor a normal man. So she did the next best thing. Asked him to dance with her, and after a while, propositioned a kiss from him so that she will leave him alone. Heavy flirting and hesitation ensued before she finally got what she wanted. Fast forward to a lot of touching and kissing and all that. It lasted a while until they heard footsteps coming, and he pushed her away. The other men approached and tried to grill her for being a horrible little piece of bait, because clearly there was no reason for her to want Lucien, because apparently he's super ugly.
Wow.
Which pissed her off.
That's rude as shit.
Until Lucien told the men to back off because she's unimportant.
Oh.
I know.
Oh.
It hurt her. It, like, genuinely hurt her.
Oh.
Hearing that crushed her.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And he announced that he knew her name and who she is. But before she could lay on some truths to their twisted narrative of her, Cronus made himself known by freezing time. And with a whole lot of hesitation, she ran. She didn't want to leave him behind, but she was also like, you called me unimportant, I'm out.
Deuces.
Yep. Lucien, however, unfroze before his friends. Cronus mentioned how he had been hunting Anya, and now he is telling Lucien to kill her. Otherwise, all those he holds dear to him will die. He, of course, asked Cronus why Cronus wanted her dead so bad. His answer was that she was anarchy, and she leaves destruction everywhere she goes. That's it.
Mm.
That's his reason.
Mm.
I'm like, bullshit, but
he's,
all right.
He's a douche nozzle.
You're a douche nozzle. We all know it.
We all know it.
Lucien agreed, and Cronus left, leaving the other lords absolutely perplexed as to how Anya disappeared. Lucien didn't tell them what had happened. He didn't want to explain. Instead, he instructed all of them to go back inside, and after a moment, he cornered Reyes and asked more about her. He was the one who ghouled her after she helped them last time with Maddox and Ashlyn's curse issue.
Oh.
Yeah. So turns out that he knew Anya was in trouble since she had killed the new guard of the prisons. They didn't know why, just that it happened. Reyes gave him all the knowledge he has on her, and in that time Lucien battled internally about the fact that he wants to be with her, but needed to complete his mission for his family.
Mm.
He knew he had to do it. He couldn't risk otherwise. After his discussion with Reyes, and Reyes accusing him of something happening despite his insistence on it having been nothing, he was like, dude, you are still bruised from kissing the woman, and you are, like, all over the place. Something definitely happened. It wasn't nothing.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Also, no, they didn't go all the way. They just made out a lot. And heavy petting.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. He told his friend that he will not be traveling with his friends to Greece, and he has a soul to take. Then he searched for Anya. He found her essence with his blue eye, which is his spirit eye, and he followed it. First to his bedroom, and then Maddox and Ashlyn's, then to Danica's apartment, though he didn't know how Anya knew where she lived, then to a convenience store in the States, and finally to a park.
Hmm.
Where she was excited to see him at first, but that she was angry at him for having called her unimportant. But he told her that he was sorry and that he was there to kill her. And she was like, oh, great. You want to kill me for some weird reason? But then he revealed it was Cronus that wanted her dead.
Mm-hmm.
She was going to go down with a fight. She wasn't going to go down without a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Even tried to call her favor on him to make him stop. Because remember, she had a favor.
Yes.
But he insisted he had to complete his mission. So she took a dagger and threw it at his heart. Direct hit.
Mm.
He was surprised and was like, you stabbed me. She was like, consider it a party favor. Bye.
Oh, that's funny.
And flash to Antarctica.
Antarctica? What?
Yeah, she can flash.
Oh, okay. Yeah, flashed it. Gotcha.
Yep.
I understand now.
Okay.
I'm following. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Gosh, I'd hope so.
Smelling what you're cooking.
Okay, stop. She knew he would follow, didn't know how, but he showed, and she shoved him in the ocean, then flashed to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
But he was right on her heels. She tried to talk him out of it again, and he wouldn't, but he had his own questions. Why does Cronus want you dead? Why did you kill that guard? Well, Cronus wants her, what she calls her gift. So he wants to steal it from her. Also, that guard wanted to sleep with her, and she said no. So he tried to take it, and she figured he would look better with a hole in his chest.
Ooh.
Lucien hopes she made him suffer on that part. Well, let's skip forward now, because we know that their sexual tension is ridiculous, and they are about to fight, and I quote, like in Halo 3, per Anya.
Oh, she said that?
She literally said that.
Oh.
So they began to fight. They flashed and fought and caught each other in all sorts of death blow positions. But in the end, she nearly killed him. And in return, he kissed her.
Oh.
Yeah, it went from bloody to naughty in like 2.5 seconds.
Yeah.
It was really weird because the entire time they fight a lot. And every single time he's just like, why the fuck am I hard for this woman? I don't understand.
I am not comfortable with the energy that we have made today in the studio. This is not...
I love it. Before anything more than a steamy... Before anything more than a steamy kiss could happen, though, he pushed her away from her and said he needed to get away from her. That they'll meet again, and he left.
Fuck off with that dorky shit. We'll meet again.
Well, he promised that he had to kill her, so... Oh. Of course they would. For the next, well, day, I suppose, he couldn't get her out of his mind. He typically is ruthless with his targets, but he nearly fucked this one. Like...
Not in the good
way. What the fuck? No, in the good way.
Oh.
It was Anya. Oh. He was like, what the fuck? He was so frustrated that he punched a wall so hard he broke his own hand.
Nice.
Almost causing Ashlyn and Maddox to come running in. And Maddox was like, he's fine. You need to rest. And Ashlyn was like, I'm only 4 months pregnant. I don't need to rest that much.
What? No, no.
Yep, they're expecting.
Oh.
Ashlyn and Maddox are having a kid.
Okay, but that attitude, that mentality, no.
Like, leave me alone.
No, the I don't need to rest.
Well, it's not an I don't need to rest. It was I don't need to rest that much. He's constantly trying to keep her bedridden, is what it is.
And she's like, cares about her health and the baby.
Yes, of course he does. But also, like, respect. 4 months.
I don't know how much bodies get affected in 4. I'm a man. I'm dumb when it comes to childbirth.
Yep. Anyway. I thought you would be excited that they're having their own kid.
I am. Okay. I'm very happy. Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, Ashlyn was trying to insist that something is wrong. That she knew about the woman and all that, but he insisted he was fine and that she wasn't important despite Death wanting her as well. Which was weird because Death doesn't speak. Ever.
Oh.
And he did when it came to Anya.
Oh. Taco.
He wanted her. After a little more catch-up from the previous book, Torin is healing all right and Aaron isn't doing so well. He's taken to injuring himself to satiate the bloodlust. Yeah, it's not good.
Sure, you know.
He's losing himself in wanting to kill the women. Still.
Oh.
Yeah. So he left to Greece. Well, Lucien left to Greece.
Okay.
And waited for the other men to arrive, all while still pondering Anya and her sexy mysteries.
Stop.
No. In the middle of his pondering, the other men arrive. At first, Strider was like, how the hell did you make it here before us? But they explained that he knows how to flash from one point to another. Then they explained that the temple they were supposed to be going to was called the Temple of All Gods. Which reminded him that Anya didn't tell him, which made him angry because he spiraled about how he had to kill her still and he didn't want to do that and all that jazz. So he took a moment to calm himself down by flashing himself to Antarctica and throwing himself in the water. He's like, I literally need to cool down. So he did.
Sure.
He's not sure anything could ever get his mind off Anya again.
Mm.
But Anya had already spent 24 hours away from the man, and she already wanted more of him.
Nope.
So as the men prepared to pounce on the hunters that inhabited the temple, like, hours later, she flashed next to Lucien, forcing him to tell the men he needed more time. Basically landing on top of her and flashing both of them back to his room to chain her up with the immortal chains that once held Maddox for his death curse.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, they literally chained him up, stabbed him 6 times, carted him down to hell, and then he was back in the morning.
Yep, I remember that. It was
like the worst death curse ever.
Yeah, he was, no, and then, yeah.
Yeah, well.
I remember.
Yeah, for those who don't remember, go back to that episode.
Yeah. I remember, you member.
I remember, you
member. Everybody member.
However, Anya could not be imprisoned. Ever.
Oh.
So she told him she couldn't be contained, and that he wasn't going to stop her from helping them. So she flashed inside, and the men were signaled to attack. When they had finished, Lucian started his task of sending the hunters' souls to their proper locations, and by the time he got back, Anya was gone.
All right.
Inside of this temple, the hunters had imprisoned two men. One younger than the other, both related in some way. Guessing it's like grandfather and grandson situation.
Okay.
But they had information about how to obtain Pandora's box.
Ooh.
According to legend, there are four artifacts that bring them closer to Pandora's box. The All-Seeing Eye, the Cloak of Invisibility, the Cage of Compulsion, and the Pairing Rod. Some say they once belonged to Cronus, and then when Zeus enslaved him, they were hidden since it was prophesied that when the Titans came back, they would destroy the Greeks permanently.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem now is that they don't know why these items are needed to get the box, or how to use them once they're acquired.
Mm-hmm.
Much less where they possibly could be. So, with that, he got their address, thanked them for their time, and flashed them back home, where he found Anya waiting to scrub their memories.
Mm.
This was the moment he realized that Cronus could fuck right off. Because without Anya, he would suffer regardless.
Mm-hmm.
After Anya had wiped the men's memories, she returned back to Hawaii, where she swam and pondered and realized that Cronus had picked her executioner well, because she couldn't keep away from him. Oh well.
Cheeky bitch.
She's like, oh well. If she could get another kiss out of this, it might be fun. So she appeared next to him, and death purred like an excited kitten.
Alright.
Yep. Naturally, she taunted him, and that darn sexual tension was back again.
Oh, tricky.
Yeah, that darn sexual tension.
That's funny. There's sexual tension in, kind of, in the game that I played.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, there is.
I don't talk about it, but it's there.
It's there. But he basically gave in to her only a little to get information. She explained that Cronus mm-hmm. doesn't know where the items were, that the lords are being used to find the items for Cronus so that he can get the box himself, which means perpetual control forever.
Yep.
Lucian realized that there might be a way to find the items, and in the process of pushing her away again, he upset her. So, she wouldn't be telling him much more. So, a little bit of a side note. He kept making her feel insecure, and you can really tell she's trying not to take it so personally, but she really cares, which also breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Probably as much as finding out he considers himself absolutely hideous and unworthy of love.
Oh.
I know. Isn't that sad?
That is.
So he figured out that he could tease her to make her feel better, and I mean not that kind of teasing, just like...
Bounch. Oh.
No. just like verbally. And they joked with each other a little about her murder, which I guess works. In the end, she basically mentioned she will help look for the artifacts and maybe imprison Lucian to make him be nice to her. And with a finger wave, she flashed. It, of course, wasn't long before she returned to him.
Oh, yeah.
But this time she was determined to be helpful, useful. So she told him the history of the temple, what its uses were for, and in the process she remembered the moment she was cursed with... I think it's Themis's curse. Themis, if I say that wrong, just email us about it. Which basically was punishment for her mother's promiscuity, for having a child with her husband. And her mother was cursed with illness after bedding any man.
Mm-hmm.
For Anya being born.
Oh.
Oh, no, for Anya being born... Oh. She was cursed with entrapment of any man who had penetrative sex with her,
mm.
causing her to forever be attached to him for all eternity. So Anya's a virgin.
Okay.
She's never been tied to any man. And think about what the god, or not the god, the guard tried to do. And she killed him for it.
Yes, good for her.
Yes.
Holy shit.
Yeah, part of the curse was also if he died, she was forced to mourn him for all eternity.
Oh.
Yes, it's cruel. It's very cruel.
Yeah, that is a curse.
Yeah. In doing so, it strengthened her resolve to never have someone keep her. Until Lucian. She was like, yeah, this is probably the one I'd be fine with.
No.
So he brought her back to the present, and he asked what she was thinking about, and she told him barely the truth in single word answers. She's like, yes, no, maybe, like, kind of things like that. Including her memory of before she killed that nearly rapist of a guard.
Okay.
And he got jealous and backed off. Back to the temple, she explained that sacrifices of blood happened there. It didn't have to be sacrifices that people assumed by giving their own family members, but willing of giving blood was enough. So they could have cut their own, like, hands and just been like, here's some blood for my sacrifice, instead of sacrificing their own children. And they did so. She's like, it was gross. I really wish they didn't happen.
It was gross.
It was gross.
Fucking yuck.
So Lucian cut both of his wrists.
Oh.
Then he dropped and both of his eyes turned blue. He could definitely see something and he called the men in to tell them. Turns out Zeus had instructed Hydra, as Ashlyn predicted.
And Hydra, sorry.
To... bad. To separate and take the four artifacts to hide them from everyone, including the gods. Anya asked if he could see any symbols, which was a resounding yes, because Zeus sure would have made sure he could eventually find them himself.
Mm-hmm.
So the symbols signified the following locations: South Africa, the Arctic, the States, and Egypt. After a bit of frustration and a demand that Anya wasn't going to help them find the artifacts, they were split up and getting ready to find the objects. But they kept going between wanting her to help and not, so she was like, come on, you need me.
You need me, fucker.
Yeah. And Lucian agreed to take her with him. Yay! Until then, she decided to flash away.
Okay.
Lucian had begun his shopping trip of provisions needed for the trip when he was approached by Anya yet again, who has basically forced him to go shopping with her in Zurich.
Okay.
Switzerland, I believe?
Hmm.
He followed, and she made him have dinner with her along with a full conversation about what Cronus wants from her. Essentially, he wants a key, and in turn for this knowledge, she learns that he's never defied death or hasn't ever been forced to do weird deeds like this until Cronus forced him and Aaron to.
Okay.
So this is a first. Hmm. Usually the gods, like, left them alone.
Oh.
When they had finished and she teased him again to no end, they left for shopping. And I mean that kind of teasing.
Okay.
She was like, you know, we could stay here and fool around a bit.
Ah.
And he was like, no, we need to go shopping. And she was like, okay, bye. but not before Cronus announced that Lucian had disobeyed him. So Lucian suggested a different course of action. If he could get the key for Cronus, he wouldn't have to kill Anya. Surprisingly, Cronus agreed, but if he failed, he would have Anya's head. Lucian took that as a little win and caught up with Anya. So they went on their shopping adventure, and he learned that her compulsion to steal isn't just a fun thing. It's a necessity to prevent even greater chaos.
Oh.
And she's like, do you want me to steal a pair of gloves, or do you want me to set the building on fire? Because I'll do both. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. Like... it's literally her compulsion as her goddess of, you know, disorder. It's anarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently she had actually caused some wars just because she could. She thought it was fun. And the moment she stole something, she realized she didn't have to do that anymore.
All right.
It's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Then they went back to Greece and she basically stripped down to her underwear in front of him. And he was like, well, fuck. He tried to compose himself, and he wanted her hella bad, but he asked about the key that she has. Then he revealed that Cronus would either take her dead or have the key, so she's like, I can't live without it, so you're gonna have to kill me. And with that, one last pleading moment, he went to her, took out his knife, and struck. Plot twist!
Oh.
We get to follow Paris for a moment.
Oh, shit, okay.
Yeah. So this poor dude has been scouring the streets of Athens trying to find a woman.
Oh.
It had been too long since he'd done something that he, like, he was weakening. And promiscuity doesn't give a fuck what it fucks.
Yeah.
And he's like, I do. I have a preference for women. It's not always been that way with promiscuity. And he doesn't want to deal with that again. And it will turn to harsher methods. To get what it wants.
Oh.
And he's like, I don't want to do that. I don't ever want to do that. Not again.
We're not like that.
Not at all. Yeah. So he was having horrible luck with women rejecting him left and right.
Aww.
Which is not normal. It was driving him crazy. And he was like, oh, gods, no, not this.
What the fuck is going on with me?
Yeah. He's like, this is what happened to Maddox and Lucian before they met their women. He couldn't bear to put a woman through his promiscuous life. So he was hoping he would stay away from them like that. Except he manages to run into a beautiful woman named Sienna, who was average as best in his eyes. But he was like, I'll take anything. So she ran into him while reading.
Mm-hmm.
That's appropriate.
Yeah.
She's apparently plain looking, but he's like, woman is woman. So
he... Oonga boonga.
Yep. Yes. The Oonga boonga part two. So he worked his charm and flirted with her. Laid it on, like, real thick. And when he finally got to where he wanted her, she apologized and stabbed him in the neck with a needle.
What the fuck?
She was bait, after all. And then he passed out.
That bitch.
I know. I was like, wait, I know this name. Okay, mind you, I've read almost all of these books. So I was like, I know her. I think she has a part in it, but I can't remember
I
what.
I know her.
Yeah, I know her.
Oh my god, I know her.
So after Paris passes out, we get to join Reyes, who is cutting himself as per usual, keeper of pain, you know.
Classic Reyes.
Yeah. And he realized that he was still thinking about Danica. He wanted her stupid bad. He wanted to care for her in every way, but he couldn't. Didn't know where she was.
Mm.
And even if he could have her, he wouldn't do that to Aaron, not to his brother. He's not that cruel.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Aaron, I know, so many jumps, he's been tormented.
Is that what you what? Wrote?
No.
Oh, that's just what you're about to say.
Yeah, I said so many jumps. He literally jumped around a lot.
Yeah.
He's been tormented this entire time by the urge to kill the women. He's been hurt by the fact that his own friends only visit to bring them food, but he had a plan, and it's gonna happen very soon.
Ooh.
Yeah, not good.
Mysterious.
Back to our main story.
Our main story.
Anya survived.
Hey.
She flashed before he stabbed her, and she was pissed. Like, what? But she was determined he wouldn't kill her. Yeah. She would kill him.
Oh. Dun, dun, dun.
So she armed up, waited for him, and when he appeared, she flashed to his room, grabbed the immortal chains, and told us, the raiders, that she has the all key.
Mm.
The one thing that prevented her from being locked up by anything except her own curse.
Okay.
Her father gave it to her, and after he had became essentially a shell of himself, crumbling right before her. A token of his love for his daughter, who had been cursed by his wife. But her mother was tending to him, and she liked to think that they were happy. Mm-hmm. Her father is Tartarus, by the way.
Oh.
The prison guard of the same name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, if she were to give up the key, she would lose all of her powers and memories. No way in hell was she going to give all that up for bargaining with Cronus.
Yeah.
So, when Lucian appeared, she flashed again to the middle of a street in New York, to a gay club in Italy, and an elephant enclosure in Oklahoma, then finally back to Greece.
Isn't she, like, in her underwear?
No, she's dressed up now. She's in clothes.
Okay.
She's, I think she was in where... She was wearing, like, super tight head-to-toe black because she was trying to kill him.
Ah.
Yeah. Lethal status.
Lethal.
Yeah.
Lethality.
Where she hid the chains in the apartment in Greece and palmed a taser, hoping he would get hit by a car, get groped, and stepped in shit before he got there. And yes, all of that happened.
Wow.
Yeah, except he landed in the lap of a man with an erection. So she's like, how'd you enjoy the car and the shit? And he was like... That I could handle. I landed in the lap of a man with an erection. An erection, Anya.
Anya?
That is in the book.
Oh, that's funny.
And I was like, that's great. So he demanded she tell him why she took him to his room in Buddha, but no. She tased him instead. Then she threw throwing stars at him, and he was like, why don't you just give me the key? And she was like, why don't you just choose me over Cronus? Over your friends.
Oh, shit.
Whoops.
Whoopsie doodle.
She yelled that she could have helped him with the box, with the journey, but he chose Cronus and he kind of just deflated.
Oh.
And as she kept throwing things at him, he told her to calm down.
Calm down.
Calm down, Anya.
Yeah, great idea. Sure, great that's fucking a great idea. That's a fucking amazing idea, buddy.
Tell Anarchy to calm down. Yeah. Do that. Then she said as if he was going to kill her, he'd have to work for it.
Mm-hmm.
So they fought and flashed throughout the room. Then he said he wanted to fight honorably and retrieve two swords for them in a flash. Then the fight began.
Mm-hmm.
While they fought, they spoke, and in the end, she told him to cut out the poor me axe, since it was possible for a woman to find him attractive with scars, that she actually did like him, and he needed to cut it out.
Oh.
Which surprised him. He genuinely didn't think she did, but was using him.
Oh.
So when they were pushed back into the bedroom, he pulled her on top of him to kiss her, reminding her how much she doesn't hate him in the process. He's like, you don't hate me. Kiss.
You don't hate me. Kiss again.
But she tried to fight her feelings, told herself to lock him with the chains because she set those up, but she couldn't do it. Even was like, do I really want to be bound to this man forever?
Ooh.
But let's skip ahead to the fact that things got super soaker sexy really quick. Yes, that's the title. Super Soaker Sexy.
Oh,
really quick.
I had something written down, but that's good.
Is that better?
That's good.
And in the little interim between sexy acts, Anya explained her curse to him. So he promised to do his part without fulfilling that curse. Yep, he wanted her and nothing was going to stop that. The ultimate trust.
All right.
And no, it wasn't quick. He took his time.
Oh.
But then it was over. And he told her that this was just the beginning.
Heyo.
In their afterglow, of course, Lucian mused how he had fallen for an immortal woman whom he was destined to kill, but he couldn't. He couldn't do anything Cronus wanted him to. They were about to go for another round when Death demanded they do their job, so he went quick, then came back to play a little longer until Strider entered the apartment. And he was like, the fuck happened here? The whole place was destroyed.
Nice. It walks in.
And it was then that Anya chained Lucian.
Aww.
It took a photo shot a la Strider for him to be able to call Anya back to him. But once he had gone, Lucian had got a vision from Death. Cronus had found Anya and they were in a heated argument. Which is unfortunate because he was at her apartment in Zurich for the Allkey.
Oh.
Which, now we find out, has to either be willingly given for the recipient to remain strong, or for the one giving death, or the one giving the death blow will remain powerless for all his days. So they can have the all key, but at what cost?
Yeah.
What a gift. So after a bit of back and forth and some bargaining, Cronus left as angry and empty-handed as he had before, and Anya realized that Cronus knew how much Lucian meant to her.
Right on.
Not great.
No.
Lucian had worked himself up in a frenzy, though. He was blind to everything, including when Anya reappeared.
Mm-hmm.
She had calmed him, but unfortunately for him, she decided to be aloof again.
I love that word.
Aloof.
I love it. I'm going to be real honest with you.
It's a really great word.
It is.
For his safety, though.
Fair enough.
So she decided that they should go to her friend William's house to replace the supplies that they had destroyed in his rage.
Oh.
But he was frustrated again. He didn't want her to act this way. He knew that something had happened with Cronus, but she wasn't talking.
Yeah.
They flashed to William's home, where they found him in all sorts of, let's say he was just busy with a couple of guests. So right. He invited them in, and he, like, had his pants, like, pulled on, but they were unbuttoned.
Mm.
And he was just like, what are you doing here? I'm kind of busy.
Oh, this is high.
Yeah. You'll later learn that this is William the Ever-Randy. That is his nickname. Not in this book, but you'll find out.
Hello, I'm the Ever-Randy. I hate it.
Yeah, he was cursed by Hera more than once and by Zeus because he used to be her lover.
Oh.
But then she found out he was not the only one. He was not pleasing just her.
Ah.
And she was like, well, you're fucked. So, anyway. He invited them in, and Lucian got really jealous of their friendship real quick. Mm-hmm. So when William had been beckoned back to his duo of trouble, Lucian pinned Anya first to demand what Cronus had said, but also to finish what they had started.
Oh.
She didn't tell him, but she sure as hell gave in. And so began the part fucking part two.
Where the fucking
part two.
The fucking squared.
That's also great. Where there were a lot of details and they were great. when they had finished, they snuggled and he fell asleep with a smile on his face. Which he doesn't do.
Fair enough.
Then he woke up being summoned, and Anya was kind of sad, realizing she had been so rude to him for his safety. But he knew. She didn't know, but he knew.
Yeah.
When he returned, she realized he'd been taking many souls to where they need to go, and she asked if he could take her with him. Mm-hmm. She didn't mention it was for him to have some peace, so he didn't have to deal with the begging alone, because, you know, he also has to take people down to hell, and they beg.
Yeah.
But still, he didn't answer. Ever wonder what happened to Paris?
I would love to know what happened to Paris.
We're about to find out. He was stuck in a prison with the girl who kidnapped him, Sienna. Okay. He did everything he could to play her like a fiddle, to use her as he needed. But because he couldn't remember her name, his advances didn't work. And yes, she was a hunter, a new one. Only been working with them for about a year.
All right.
Unfortunately, his lack of consideration made it so that she just got angry and left him. She's like, you don't even know my name. All right, fuck off.
That's fair.
Meanwhile, Maddox was taking food down to Aaron. He was musing about his time with his friend, how Ashlyn had saved him, and what kind of father he would be. He was really excited, and he was nervous at the same time. When he got down to the dungeon.
Okay.
But he didn't hear the rattling of chains or any noise at all. Mm. What he found was a cell that had its bars pried apart. Aaron was gone. Yeah. So, yeah. Fuck.
Yeah.
Is the answer to that. It's
this is,
fuck.
This is pregnant lady, right?
Aaron...
No.
No, she's not the one. It's Danica who's in trouble.
Okay.
So while Reyes was on the other side of the world and frustrated that the location of the temples had been revealed to everyone, on top of the fact that Lucien looked happy and he was jealous as fuck,
yeah,
he got a call from Maddox telling him that Aaron had escaped. He was feeling all sorts of feelings. Luckily, Torin had insisted on putting some sort of tracking dye in Aaron's food, so he had the coordinates to get to him. If he failed, Danica would die. Mm-hmm. If she wasn't already dead. Back to our lovebirds. They were eating breakfast with William when Lucien got called to work. She begged to go with him, and he said no until William was like, that's fine, she can stay here and sit on my lap. So he was like, you're coming with. And when she was a great help to his comfort. He actually thanked her for helping him. Mm-hmm. When they returned, Anya was on the verge of spilling why they needed to go to the Arctic Circle when she suggested, instead of just borrowing his gear, that they lead them instead. Mm-hmm. After all, he knew the place better than anyone.
Yeah.
At first, it was a resounding no. But when Anya revealed that she stole his book of prophecy and he'd have to earn it back, he changed his tone.
Fair enough.
Things were great. They were ready. And even though Lucien realized he could never get the key without harming her in any way or binding him to Cronus, he knew he couldn't do anything anymore. But that didn't change anything. He still cared about her, so they kissed.
Ooh.
And Cronus decided at that moment to take over Lucien's body. To warn Anya that he will weaken every day that he doesn't get the key. Mm-hmm. So when he faded away, Lucien was more determined than ever to get those artifacts. They're the source of his power. They need to stop him.
Gotcha.
Lucien was entirely on board with this, even as Anya tried to apologize before they headed out to the cold Arctic. He didn't accept it, not because he was cruel, but because he loved her and cared about her. Even told her.
Aww.
He knew she couldn't say it back because of her love of her freedom and how much it scares her, but he knew she loved him too.
Aww.
So they got ready. I know, it was gross. It's cute.
This is grossly cute. It is grossly cute. I'm a fan.
Think about how these two are, too. They're like... Yeah. Extremely outcasted in one way or another and think that they're undesirable, but they found each other.
Mm-hmm.
Gross. So they got ready.
Oh, that's so gross. I love it.
So they got ready, and William insisted they don't flash but take a helicopter to the Arctic. And they complained about the stuff and the weight and the, well, everything about not using flashing.
Fair enough.
It's his way or the highway, though. Especially since he trapped the mountain that they needed to get to, and they wouldn't know where those would be. So let's skip forward ahead a little, mm-hmm. and it has been 3 days before they found a hunter, and Lucien was weakening super quickly. With every moment that passed, he grew more tired, and he could barely walk without getting tripped up on himself, which was concerning Anya. By the fourth day, they had reached the summit and found their way inside. Knowing hunters had beat them there, they silently approached and now knew that the Cage of Compulsion was the item that was hiding in there.
Ooh.
When William gave them a silent countdown to ambush the hunters, on the count of three, they pounced and took out all eight that were waiting for them.
Mm.
But not without casualty.
Oh.
Lucien had gotten shot in the stomach.
Jesus.
He also had been set on fire. And since he was weakening, he felt every bit of it.
Fuck.
And as he collapsed. Anya promised he would be okay, then made him promise the same to her, and then he fell asleep.
Oh.
William mentioned that he might not make it through the night, but he said it so flippantly that Anya was, like, irritated.
Mm-hmm.
It was during the sad moment of watching him fade that she realized that she was in love with him and was willing to go all the way with him sexually.
Mm.
It might give him strength, so she decided that with the mission not being important without him helping her, she decided to take him back to William's house and, well, do the deed. Speaking of sexy time, let's rejoin Paris.
Yeah.
Who was currently naked and strapped to a table, having already been poked and prodded by many, many hunters.
Mm-hmm.
And he was dreaming of Sienna. He didn't know why, but the demon wanted her and only her. Luckily, because of his body's reaction to her name, the hunters obliged without ever having to ask. Again, he was naked and his dick twitched when they said her name. Yeah, I don't know why that happens, but it's funny. He's putting around in this figure thinking he was like a dick. Anyway.
Hello?
Anyway. So time went by and Paris had woken up maybe hours later with Sienna in the room. He was still chained and he started saying horrible things to her about how this made her the hunter's whore since she was getting paid to seduce him. But she only responded that this was her willingness to meet him. That they were mutually attracted, but she's not about to untie him.
Okay.
No matter how much he attempted to suggest they finish what they started. Of course, we can't have a Paris update without an Aaron and Reyes one.
Yeah.
So to sum it up, Reyes followed Aaron all the way to New York City, where he'd been killing people left and right, which means it didn't take long for them to run into one another and start the battle.
Mm-hmm.
But our update isn't over. Danica gets a little one where we learn that she's been on the run since she's escaped Reyes,
okay.
even though she's dreaming of him every night. She's learned how to fight, and up until now, she was decently safe when her mom called her with the news that her grandmother is missing. She's not sure if she's dead, but she hasn't heard from her in a while now. While on the phone, she heard a window smash near her, and she told her mom to run and hide again, and that she loved her. When she had made the decision not to run but fight, she approached him and realized this was definitely Aaron.
Yeah.
And lunged at him to slice his throat. Which does nothing to an immortal.
Yeah.
And they fought. She fought pretty damn well. Then Reyes joined the fray. She was basically thrown across the room and nearly fainted when Reyes instructed her to run, which she gladly obeyed. I'm going to skip a little bit with Anya and Lucien, and I'm going to tell you that, yes, they fucked, like, all the way.
Okay.
She allowed him to have her curse fulfilled with him, but in doing so, he got stronger. He wasn't 100%, though.
Mm.
But it helped enough that they could get back to William to be able to finish this quest.
Okay.
They returned, and after many more hours of hiking, realizing... Wow,
that happened.
That was a thing.
Yeah.
a realization that the two were now bonded, and a lot of whining happened. They had found a doorway in the side of a mountain. Then I get another Paris update where Sienna surprises him by fulfilling his wish.
Oh.
Which also gave him the strength that he needed to escape with Sienna in his arms and willing to help. Through wave after wave, these two ran together, and when it was finally saved, he not only realized that her body desired him, I said that backwards, his body desired her again, which never happened, but that she had been shot.
Oh.
And after a moment, she had died saying that she should have killed him.
Oh.
I know! Back to Anya. Lucien had stopped Anya before she went bounding inside the doorway and told William to go first, renewing his hope. They entered the chamber to find a warm paradise, shed their extra clothing, and spotted the cage of compulsion, just in time for William to apologize and stab Lucien in the torso.
Oh.
I forgot to write this down, but Anya took the cage and flashed it to where her parents were.
Oh.
To keep it safe.
Okay.
So, William stabbed Lucien. It was because Cronus had come to him too while they were packing and had made a deal with them. Kill them both, and he gets to live.
Mm.
Luckily, Lucien wasn't dead. Not yet.
Mm-hmm.
And she went into an absolute rage, ready to kill William for his betrayal. Just as they leapt into battle, Hydra rose from the water near them.
Oh.
Yeah, great timing.
Hello.
Lucien decided that he would handle this like a true warrior and went to fight the beast.
Hey, buddy. Yeah. How you doing?
How you doing?
Oh, my God.
I'm gonna cut your heads off and then cauterize them.
Jesus, look at you. You're fucking ugly.
Anyway. Meanwhile, Anya's battle with William was epic. She was moving so swiftly, and she was absolutely a match for his... Absolutely a match for his skill. She even won this battle, but she didn't kill him. She promised to come back every time he healed to deliver damage time again and again until she was satisfied with his suffering. Because you don't do that to her man. Then she went to help Lucien with defeating Hydra. He had a plan to slip into the spirit world and hold on to Hydra's soul while Anya decapitated and cauterized the wounds of the Hydra, which worked.
Mm-hmm.
But when they were done, Lucien couldn't reconnect with his body. It was too weak.
Wow.
She frantically tried to revive his body while he watched, and she yelled at him to live and that she would give Cronus the All Key if it meant he could, but it was too late. His body and spirit disconnected, and she watched his spirit disappear.
Oh.
Which made her vomit the moment she saw him leave. She cried out for Cronus to bargain with him. When he appeared, he demanded not only the key, but the cage as well.
Mm-hmm.
She said no, only the key for his life, and if he went after it, they would know of his dishonesty, and the lords would help the Greeks revive.
Mm.
So he flashed them back to Lucien's home. He was alive and well, sleeping on the bed, and Anya flashed to her mother, who was watching the cage for her. She wanted to be locked in the cage after she gave up the key so that she couldn't run from him after she forgot, so he could win her heart again.
Aww.
Then she gave the key over and fainted.
Aww.
It had been 4 days, and Anya had kept yelling at Lucien to release her. She didn't have her memories from after she got the key, but she retained her power.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because of their bond together. He didn't know what he could do to help her. He couldn't release her, but he loved her still.
Yeah.
It seems he's not the only one filled with pain. Paris had come back to the mansion entirely destroyed. He wouldn't talk about it, though, and Reyes and Aaron were still missing. Last heard they were in the States.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't know what was going on with Danica and her family, either.
Yeah.
He was patient with Anya, and as were his friends, who came to thank her for her sacrifice, and with a heavy heart, he realized he couldn't bear to see her imprisoned, especially by him. So he let her go. Almost. Then he realized anyone in the cage had to do anything they told him.
Mm-hmm.
Told them. Anya confirmed that for him before her memories were gone. So he pushed her back inside the cage. She told him what the fuck was wrong with him, told her to sit down and be quiet, then told her to remember him and everything they went through.
Oh.
And after a heavy, heavy pause, she remembered him. He let her out, and obviously they started kissing and all that, and he asked her to marry him. And she was like, yeah, duh.
Duh.
Then asked if she was up for another adventure since Reyes was busy with Aaron and MIA. They only had one artifact that wasn't being searched for. She agreed, and as they, fucked again, he realized that he was the happiest he'd ever been.
Aww.
The end!
Oh, the end.
Nice. Yeah, the end! Yeah, no, the end of the book finishes with a literal climax.
With a literal finish.
A literal climax.
A literal finish.
That's... Yeah, so these books, I'm gonna keep rating high. They keep delivering. They're so fun and funny, and each character is well presented, and
yeah.
I just I love Lucien too, because he's like, what the fuck is wrong with me? Why do I like this woman? And the fact that they like fight constantly, but he's still like super attracted to her, makes me laugh. He's just like, I don't get it. Why is fighting turning me on? Yeah. I don't understand.
Why?
Yeah. So, yeah, solid 9 out of 10.
Right on.
Always, always good. It's not going to be perfect because there's a lot of back and forth that I'm like, people are frustrating, but I love it. I love this book.
Fair enough.
What do you think?
It was cute. Again, you know how I feel about the too much sex in a book thing.
Yeah.
So
this one was, she like ramped it up.
Yeah, she was just like, and they want each other. And it's like, okay.
They want each other, but she only wanted a kiss from him first.
Yeah.
And then from there, it was like, okay, heavy petting. Holy fuck, what the shit, you know? And yeah. I was like, wow, you really jumped into this.
Yeah, but yeah, it was good.
It was great.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a break!
Break time! Almost 1,000 years ago, the world of Anai experienced an event that changed the very dynamic of the world itself. A mysterious being, known only as the Chaos Bringer, brought upon this event, which has been dubbed the Collapse. It was a usual day for those in the material realm. Empires were flourishing, cities rising, and people living. Then portals began to open. Mysterious objects appeared through them, from the Nine Hells to the Astral Plane, the Feywild, and everything in between. As soon as these portals opened, they seemingly closed. Creatures, buildings, even entire biomes from the further realms remained. Landscapes were changed in an instant. Kingdoms emerged where wastelands once stood. Races and creatures that were thought to be extinct have returned. While nearly a millennium has passed and the changes have become a regular part of life, the scars of the collapse remain. Not all is lost, however. Alliances have been made, treaties signed, and life carried on. Unfortunately, even with these alliances being built, certain beings from every realm, both original and new, have made most uninhabited lands dangerous to traverse. A warning for those willing to travel these lands. Rumors have emerged that the Chaos Bringer is returning, but for what reason? Join us and find out, hopefully. The Button Masher's Realm is a monthly D&D campaign run by me, Ty. This is something I've been looking forward to for quite a while. You'll hear familiar voices along with some new ones once every month right here on Page Turners and Button Mashers, premiering in the near future, and I can't wait. See you then.
Ooh, oh. Go.
Yeah. Hello, people.
Hi, people. We're back.
How about that teaser?
How about that teaser? Ah! I'm so excited.
That's a thing I'm excited about.
I'm a familiar voice.
Yeah. I think you're like the only familiar voice. No, there might be another one that is familiar.
There might be a couple.
Two mm-hmm. that are familiar.
I'm excited about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, two other ones. So this will be good. It'll be a grand old time.
A grand old Opry.
Sure. Gaming news. Not really much in like what's coming out and whatnot, but I did get my hand on a next gen Xbox.
Woo!
I got the Series S for retail price.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't pay fucking way over for a console because I knew I didn't need to. And as I've been saying since the fucking beginning, just wait.
Patience is a virtue.
Yeah.
And it does pay off.
Yeah. So, I guess that's it for my news.
That's the only gaming news we have?
Yes.
Okay. I already mentioned Skyward Sword came out.
Yes.
Is coming out is next coming month. Out.
Oh, I'm playing a lot more Breath of the Wild than I'm doing all the DLCs.
Yes, I bought the DLCs.
Yeah.
They're so good.
I'm going to beat the game very soon. I promise that. I'm just enjoying all of the different DLCs. That's I'm just like...
It's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we'll do an update episode.
Maybe.
We're just talking about that.
Yeah.
Because it's been almost over a year since we've talked about Breath of the Wild.
It's been well over a year. Yeah.
So we might do a Breath of the Wild update.
Yeah.
And I won't bring a book. We'll just talk about that.
That'll be fun.
That sounds great.
All right. My game. All right. So last week I played Sly Cooper in The Thievius Raccoonus.
Mm-hmm.
This week I played Sly 2, Band of Thieves.
Yay.
Yeah. So this is, of course, the second game in the series.
Mm-hmm.
It was released on September 14th, 2004.
Okay.
I believe 2 years after the first one.
That would make sense.
Yeah, something like
that.
It was
2002 and it's 2004
Let me check. Almost exactly 2 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's great timing, actually. Yeah.
So the genre of this game is action adventure stealth platformer, which I believe actually varies from the other game, because I don't think they included stealth in that one, even though it was more stealth based. But
technicalities.
Yeah. Developer still Sucker Punch Productions.
Wow.
The publisher is Sony Computer Entertainment again. The systems this game or is playable on PlayStation 2 and 3. I think it's on the 4 with the whole PlayStation now. Might even be on 5 at this point. But
I think it is because you had that update thing. I can't remember what I'm talking about right now.
I have no clue what you're talking about.
I think I was thinking about the available for the download from the like previous systems thing where they had the never mind, ignore me.
That's not for a system that I got a new of, so no.
Again, I'm stupid. It's fine.
PlayStation Now is where it's available, so if it's available on PlayStation 5, then it might be. I don't know.
I think that's where I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so synopsis of this. I do want to apologize that this episode's show notes, like this synopsis, is so short. This was the best description I could find of the story that didn't just be like, and then you do this, and this, and this.
That's fair.
Yeah, so coming from the Sly Cooper fandom site,
woo,
in the show notes, of course, set 2 years after the events of the previous game, Sly 2 follows titular protagonist, which titular. I found out what titular means. It's like main.
Oh.
Yeah. Or like a person of holding high power, like.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hold on. I need to find the actual description of titular.
I think it's appropriate.
Holding or constituting a purely formal position.
Okay. I think that's appropriate that it involves holding.
Sure. So, let's see. Follows Sly Cooper and his partners in crime, Bentley and Murray.
Woo.
The story centers around their mission to defeat the Claw Gang and steal the scattered pieces of Sly's archenemy, Clockwork.
Yes.
Yeah, so the return of Clockwork.
Bad Birdie.
Sure. The things that they did differently, they essentially did a complete revamp of how you play the game.
Okay.
You no longer have hub worlds, which I will go into depth later about, but mission setups are different, how to get skills, the addition of pickpocketing. There's now a health bar system instead of the charm system from the last game.
Okay.
So they completely got rid of that. There are no lives.
Oh.
There's just checkpoints and respawns.
Oh, okay.
So you can keep coming back. You don't fail the game. You just...
That's really nice, actually.
It is. Essentially, the only thing they kept from the last game is clue bottles, basic mechanics, and stealth. Like, that's...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Otherwise...
Everything else is different.
Yeah, they really changed how you play the game, which I think is cool. So... while the clue bottles still lead to safes, like that they did in the last game, you know, there would be clue bottles in a level.
Yeah.
These are all in the main episode, like, I'll call it. They aren't hub worlds, but, like, where you are, where you run around in these missions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the clue bottles are scattered around the entire map. And you collect all of them, and then in a specific part of the map, usually in the big bad dude's office...
Okay.
Area, that's where you'll find the safe. And the clue bottles lead to the code to open these safes, which in turn gives you access to specific skills, which same as last game, this game does that. But something they implemented in this game was an actual use for the coins.
Oh.
So in the safe house for every episode, you have access to Bentley's computer and the quote-unquote website, ThiefNet.
Okay.
It's not original at all or clever. It is just literally ThiefNet. Ooh. which lets you purchase skills for the playable characters.
Mm-hmm.
So all their different skills pop up as you like go to different episodes. And here you can also sell any loot you come across via pickpocketing and general looting.
Okay.
So like around the maps you will find random like art pieces or like vases. Or, you know, things
stuff.
Things of that nature that if you are able to run back to the safe house without taking any damage,
yeah,
you are able to sell it.
That's pretty cool.
If you take damage, don't worry, just go back to where you found that item. It'll always be in the same spot. And then try again.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so.
Yay.
Good stuff there.
Major thumbs up.
Yeah, so something else that they added to this game is actually being able to play as the other members of the Cooper game. Gang.
Cooper gang.
So, in the last game, you did have the weird hacking adventure of Bentley. And you got to race in cars, quote-unquote, as Murray.
Mm-hmm.
But now you get to play as Sly, Bentley, and Murray. You get to run around the entire maps with them.
As all of them. Okay. Yes.
So, Sly is exactly as he was in the last game. Stealthy, was able to do his thief skills, you know, stuff like that.
Giving heavy sexual charm.
But yes. That's where the sexual tension comes in with Carmelita, because she's back.
Why so much sexual tension this episode?
No idea. Sensual, sexual tension, the episode.
Sensual tension.
You fucked it up, too.
Tension.
But, so Sly, exactly as he's been, he's able to be more stealthy.
Okay.
He's, like, the stealthy one. Mm-hmm. Then there's Bentley, who's all about gadgets and shit.
Okay.
So he has a crossbow with sleep arrows on it.
Sleep arrows?
Yeah, so you shoot sleep darts. So you shoot somebody and they pass out and then you go put one of his bombs on it, on them.
Yeah.
Run away and then they explode.
Whoa, what a murderous turtle.
Yeah, so he's all about gadgets. And then there's Murray, who's just the muscle.
Fair enough.
He just straight up punches people.
Also fair enough.
Yeah, so Sly and Bentley can crawl under low spaces, just, you know, get under there. Murray can't.
Yeah.
Everybody can do, like, the little thing where you're going along the side of a wall, like, a very small ledge. You can all do that. But Sly's the only one that can, like, climb up vines and slide down ropes and shit like that.
Yes.
So they all have their own purposes. Murray, crowd control and carrying heavy shit.
I mean, fair enough.
That's what Murray does.
Thank you, Murray.
He also calls himself the Murray.
The Murray.
Mm-hmm. He's, like, got this whole I'm a superhero sort of thing.
Just Lasai.
Yeah.
That's all I can think about.
Yeah.
Murray.
So, I think it's pretty cool that they allowed you to play as all the characters.
I agree.
Well, I will say the other two's mission, Bentley's and Murray's, usually they suck in comparison to Sly's, but, like, they're not terrible. I like Sly's missions the most.
Fair.
Yeah. So, moving on. Just like the first game, there are a series of episodes that are the main story of the game.
Okay.
Instead of doing a hub world with several missions within that, like you would go up to the
thing and...
And then it would go down to a different part of the map.
Mm-hmm.
What this has you do, oh god, excuse me, sorry. The hub world is where the missions take place.
Okay.
Sometimes you do head inside specific buildings within the area, but a majority of the missions take place in this quote-unquote hub.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Fair enough.
I'll be describing these in pretty much the same fashion as I did last game, but with a little more description of the places. I like giving you a little more substance than just being like, yeah, it's here, and this is the theme. You know?
Okay.
That's kind of what I did last game, so...
Enough.
To begin with, you have the prologue, which works as your tutorial. You go through a museum to get to the clockwork display and find that the parts have been stolen. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So this leads you to the first episode, the Black Chateau.
The Black Chateau.
Which means castle in French.
That's what that means.
Yep. So this is set in Paris. You can see the Eiffel Tower in the distance in the background if you look a certain way.
Okay.
But the main focus of this episode is nightclub owner Dimitri, who is like a purple iguana.
Oh, gosh.
So it's mostly set in the nighttime streets of Paris.
Okay.
With some missions taking place in different parts of the nightclub. So, like, where the disco ball is, or in Dimitri's office, or, like, the front lobby, that sort of thing.
So it's like a true nightclub.
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
Yep.
Okay.
So you do find out that Dimitri is using the clockwork tail feathers as printing press blades.
What?
Yeah.
Do printer presses have blades?
Yes. The thing that like
Okay. Yeah. Never mind. We're good.
So, he's using them as printing press blades, as since they are made out of this, like, specific metal, they'll never dull.
Oh.
So being able to make infinite counterfeit money.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what he's using the tails for. Or the tail feathers.
Brilliant, actually.
Yeah, and when you get to him, he has no idea, like, about clockwork or how dangerous he is.
He's like, I don't know what this is.
He talks in these weird slang terms. He's just like, you're the one... I can't even, like, say the half of the things he says because it's so fucking confusing.
Oh?
You come in here showing me... They're talking about the birds and the bees.
What?
But I'm here to show you how to chill. Like, that sort of shit.
What?
Yeah. And Sly at one point, when you go to face him, goes, I have no idea what you're saying.
What a fucking weird iguana.
Yeah, he's like, you see the money? You like the money? You take the money. I can make more. Like,
what?
It's like, what the fuck? There's no...
What is the point of you?
There's no pride in doing that. He's just like, there you go. He's trying to do money. The whole thing is he's part of the Claw Gang, but he's like... I would say he's the lowest member because he just is there to run a nightclub and print money.
He's just, it's disappointing in a really weird way.
Yeah. Up next is a starry-eyed encounter.
Starry-eyed encounter.
Yep. Set in India around the main antagonist of this area, Rajan's palace.
Okay.
Yeah, his whole thing is that he is a quote-unquote spice lord selling illegal spices. On the black market.
Okay.
Drugs.
Yeah.
He sells drugs.
He sells literal drugs.
Yeah, but they put it as spices in because it's a kid's game. They're just like, yeah, he's an evil spice lord. It's like, oh, spice sales are up. It's like...
We all know what you mean, but children won't.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, what spices are you using that's illegal? When I was a kid and I played this, I was just like, what spices are illegal?
One, specifically.
Yeah. Got some of that quote-unquote oregano, if you know what I mean.
Illegal oregano.
Yep. You know. So, he is using the clockwork wings as a display piece in his main ballroom.
Okay.
Literally, that's it. That's his whole, like, he's there to prove his royalty. Sly says it's to prove it to himself, because he grew up poor. Okay. He's like, I'm a rich man. Look at me.
I am rich. Look at me.
Yeah. And it's just like, you don't believe you're rich.
Okay.
Yeah. So, this episode does have two rhythm games, but they're better than the alligator from the first game.
Okay.
Because there's an actual beat. It's a tango. You do a tango with the buttons.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
So it's like X. X, circle, square. Like, that's how you do it.
Takes two to tango.
Exactly. So first you tango with Carmelita's partner, Neela.
Okay.
You'll learn about her. And then you use her to dance with Carmelita during the main heist.
Okay.
Because she doesn't know that it's you. You're wearing a disguise. Oh. It's literally Sly without his hat and he's wearing a tux.
That's the only... Okay.
It's the Clark Kent syndrome.
Yeah. Yep. Literally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just letting it slide.
Yep. Letting it slide?
Fuck off.
But, yeah, so there is some rhythm games in this one, but everything's synced up and it's good.
At least this one isn't disappointing.
Exactly. So, once you take the clockwork wings, you cast Rajan into shame. So he flees to his quote-unquote spice temple deep in the jungles of India.
Spice temple.
Yeah. Which is the placement of the next episode, The Predator Awakes. Oh. Not awakens, awakes.
Sure.
Yep. That's correct. I think it's proper, but it doesn't sound proper.
Well, unfortunately.
Yep. celebrations around.
Sorry, inside joke. We don't mean to do that to you guys.
But, let's see. So, this is the first where the same antagonist
okay.
is the same for two missions. So Rajan was for A Starry-Eyed Encounter. Now he's also the antagonist for The Predator Awakes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So here Rajan is using the Clockwork Heart to improve spice production tenfold.
Oh, shit, okay.
I don't remember how it's humping. How it's helping, because the heart is pumping and that's like causing the spice to grow more.
Okay.
Something like that. I don't know. It's they don't explain how it helps. They're just like, it's tenfold. And it's like, oh shit, better get the heart.
Alrighty then.
But like one heart is hanging above the spices and then one heart is on Rajan's stick. That okay. His staff.
Yeah.
It's really weird. So, this setting, the setting of this is literally deep in the jungle with many trees to traverse. So it's actually pretty helpful. Cool. Yeah. There's a lot of high areas that you can just kind of chill in and look around, try and figure out stuff. But there are also more enemies, so.
Oh.
Yeah. So, let's see. Once you finish these missions, Sly and Murray are captured by Interpol.
Yay.
Which is where Carmelita works for.
Yes.
But Neela uses a picture of her and Sly.
Okay.
To give to who you will soon meet as the Contessa. Be like, they were really close together, so they also arrest Carmelita.
That's unfortunate.
So Neela has been working behind Carmelita's back with you to kind of help you get things.
Yeah.
And then she's just like, oh, Carmelita, she's fucking traitor.
She's in it.
Yeah, and it's just like, you're the one that's in it, you bitch.
You bitch!
So, this perfectly segues into the next episode, Jailbreak.
Okay.
Which has you as Bentley.
Oh.
Trying to break out Sly and Murray from the Contessa's prison in Prague.
Shit, okay.
Yes. Contessa is a big spider lady.
She had to be a spider.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that Rajan is a tiger.
Okay.
Because kind of stereotype.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. I don't know what the fuck France has to do with a weird-ass iguana, but...
I do not know what to tell you.
Yeah.
Honestly.
But, so the Contessa is a spider. She married wealthy, and then the dude, her husband, mysteriously died...
Oh.
And then she got his estate, his castle and his estate, which she turned into a high end prison, a maximum security prison.
How weirdly timely.
Yeah, it's like, oh, wow, that's weird that she has all of this land now.
Yeah.
She did it. She killed him.
Of course she did.
Yeah, like, that's, of course. So, here you don't see... any clockwork parts.
Okay.
Because it's the Contessa, right?
Yeah.
She's working for Interpol.
Should be.
But you find out that the Contessa isn't a good cop as you might fucking first imagine.
I mean, never did.
She is a member of the Claw Gang.
Oh, shit.
Oh, with the others that you've already caught. Oh, fuck.
No wonder.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Fuck. So, yeah, after Murray's breakout, which Sly's breakout is like the first thing you do in this episode.
Okay.
Literally, it's just like, oh, I gotta figure out what to do. Time to eavesdrop on the Contessa. And then it's like, oh, Sly's in the hole. And you're like, well, fuck it. I'm gonna bust a hole in the wall. And you do with a train.
You're gonna bust a move?
Bust it.
Want it.
Okay.
Bust a move.
So you break out Murray and your gang leaks what Contessa is doing.
Oh shit, okay.
And that leads to the other Interpol officer, Neela, that to launch a full fledged assault on the Contessa's castle, in Prague. Yeah. Setting the scene for the next episode, A Tangled Web.
God damn.
Yeah.
Bad Contessa.
So yet another one. Where, it's a double antagonist on the same...
It's kind of cool, though.
Yeah, they really, like...
played it well.
They played it as... they doubled down on double... or the same antagonist on the same... or on two missions.
Doubled down on double antagonists.
Yeah. Yeah, they doubled down on the same antagonist for two missions.
Okay.
Yeah, so, let's see. The Tangled Web.
Okay.
Here you're essentially trying to assist Neela in her assault on the castle, because there's a giant fucking moat in the middle that her tanks can't get across. Hell, yeah, okay. Tanks! but this, you also have to do this while not getting caught by her, because that would fucking suck.
I mean, I guess fair.
Yeah. Here you also, actually, in the last one, you find, so here you find out that the Contessa is doing mind control.
Oh.
Yeah, in the last one, you find that she's doing mind control in order to get the prisoners, who are thieves,
okay,
to tell her where their stash is. Okay. And then she goes and takes all of their wealth, oh, because she knows where it is. And then she's just like, these guys are now my guards, essentially.
Okay, I mean, sure.
Because they're hypnotized.
Yeah.
In this one, you find that she's using the clockwork eyes to do that.
Oh.
Yeah.
That fucking makes sense.
Tricky dicky, right?
Tricky dicky. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So.
This episode has a lot of dick stuff in it.
Yes, it does. So she's just making more and more money. That's all that she's doing. Oh, excuse me.
Sure, why not?
Yeah. Up next, you head, after defeating Contessa, you head to the Great White North in He Who Tames the Iron Horse.
He Who Tames the High... Okay.
That is the name of this episode.
Jesus Christ, okay.
It's the name of the episode in the game.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So, this takes place in Nunavut Bay. I don't know if that's correct, because it is
Nunavut.
It is fictional. It takes place in Canada.
Okay.
Which is the secret spice shipping hub for one Jean Bison.
Jean Bison.
Spelled B-I-S-O-N.
John Bison.
He's a giant buffalo.
His name's fucking John Bison.
Yes, Jean Bison.
It's John Bison.
Yep. I fucking love that, though.
Bison are more American. Yeah. Come on.
So, he's super cool because he was alive during the gold rush.
Oh.
But then due to dynamite explosions, like an avalanche happened and he was caught in a quick freeze.
Oh, no.
So he was still alive, and then like 120-ish years later,
Jesus Christ,
he's unfrozen.
What?
And yeah, so he's all about old school technology.
That's kind of cool, but also really trippy.
Yeah. He's just this really, he's like, he's got the voice.
Ancient bison.
Not ancient, but.
For a bison.
Well, yeah.
For a buffalo?
Yeah.
Yes. That's pretty fucking ancient.
But he's just like, he's got that quote unquote gold rush like accent.
Okay.
That's his thing, except he's also Canadian. So.
All right.
He's just like, we're going to get them gold.
Okay, Sony, you pushed it just a little. Just a little.
So, let's see. Since he's all about old school technology, this is where his trains come in, aka the Iron Horse.
Okay.
His Iron Horse trains, yes.
I get it.
They are being powered by the Clockwork Stomach.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ew.
It's a metal stomach.
I know, but ew.
Patink, patink. Yeah.
Patink, patink. Yep. Ew.
So once you take this, the stomach from, and disable his spice trade, you're fucking up this entire organization. You've taken away their money. You've taken away their spice production. You're taking away their spice transportation.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Like, you're fucking them up, right?
Clearly.
Yeah. Which is good, because these guys fucking suck.
Clearly.
Yeah. So, once you take the stomach from the trains, you follow Bison north to an abandoned lumber camp. They're really sticking with the Canadian theme here.
Fucking clearly.
I fucking love it. For the next episode, Menace from the North, eh?
No.
Yes.
No.
It is Menace from the North, comma, A. Like E-H.
I am...
Yep.
Ah!
That's the name.
Fucking so, disappointing.
So here it's more snow, of course. And you find that Bison is using the clockwork talons to cut down a shit ton of trees, which is bad.
I mean, yeah, that's terrible.
He's just doing mass deforestation, essentially, and it's like, what the fuck?
What in the baby fuck. Also, I realized I messed up. It's fucking embarrassing!
It's fucking embarrassing! Yes.
I missed an opportunity.
Yes, you did. I feel like Bisson here just has a vendetta against trees. I think that's, like, his whole thing. He's just,
do you hate trees? He just fucking,
like, I think that's an actual thing about him.
Okay, but think about it. Where are buffalo from?
Oh, the plains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why would they want a tree? Why would he like trees?
He fucking hates trees. He wants to, you know. That's fucking, why. He wants to cut them down.
He wants to cut them down.
So, yeah. You get to fight him for the talons in some lumberjack games.
What?
Yeah.
You get to... What is this game?
Canada. They went really hard on the Canadian thing.
Fucking clearly.
Which, I've never seen that in a game go after Canada like that. They just really wanted to go, you know what? Fuck you, Canada.
All of the Canadian stereotypes. Let's just do all of them.
Yeah, you got the French bison, Jean Bisson, who was caught in an avalanche, also hates trees and loves trains. That's his, and does lumberjack games.
He's a Wild West Canadian.
He's a Gold Rush Canadian bison. French bison.
This is weird.
Yeah. So, I wish I was kidding, but I'm not.
I know you're not. That's the worst
The missions part. Are fun, too, because, like, one of them, you are climbing up a tree and you're using Sly's cane to, like, propel you up.
Yeah.
And the other one, you're Murray on the log doing the log run.
Okay.
Yeah. You're legit doing the log run that they do where you're... Two people are facing opposite ways and they're running trying to get the other one off.
Oh my god.
Yeah. It's fucking great.
I'm just like, what in the hell?
Yeah. So,
yeah, I played it.
Yeah, finally, you take the fight to the final member of the Claw Gang, Arpeggio.
Really?
He is a bird.
Uh-huh.
Who can't fly.
Okay.
And you find out that he is trying to put together clockwork.
Okay.
And everybody's like, it's because he can't fly, so he's fucking insecure. Yeah.
What a fucking, like, trip.
Yeah, but literally. This game is a trip. I do want to say, I forgot what I was going to say about Arpeggio. Never mind. He went to school, he's the Claw Gang's lead tech designer. That's what he is. That's what he does.
Okay.
So, he's all about technology. So, he's trying to put together clockwork. I don't remember how he got all the clockwork parts, because you've been stealing them.
Yeah.
Something that's weird. Fucking happened. I'm going to be real honest. When I was replaying it, I didn't get through it all the way again.
It's fine.
But I'm just giving you the basis of what happens. You want to figure out how he got it before you play the game. I don't know why I'm bullying you guys.
Feel the bully.
Yeah, fucking play it.
Feel our wrath.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So, oh god, I forgot what, I didn't even say what this mission is called. So let me quick, slide to missions. Because I completely forgot what this one is called.
Oh shit, that's not good.
Yeah, I forgot to write it down, which I'm dumb. Let's see, it is Anatomy for Disaster.
I mean, everything about this is a disaster, but sure.
Yeah. It's fine.
I am weirdly stressed out with this game for the fucking reason. Like, why am I stressed out about a game?
Yeah, you're finding out that these people are using shit for fucked up shit.
Why?
Dimitri is the most intense, but he's the most, like, level out of all of these people.
That's still weird.
They're not people, they're all animals, but, you know.
I mean, sure, but, like, still, it's weird.
Yeah.
Because he also, doesn't he have, like, a weird disco song that you're like, yeah, heck yeah.
We'll get there. We'll get there, okay? So, I cannot, okay, so this episode takes place on Arpeggio's blimp, which later flies over Paris. That's just the setting. That's, okay. Like, underneath you. So, that's fine. So, back at the beginning, it seems.
Okay.
It is later revealed that Neela is the one who is, like, behind all the clockwork shit.
Come on, that was fucking obvious.
Yeah, as she betrays Arpeggio, turns into, quote-unquote, clock La.
Clockla?
Yeah.
I'm gonna clockla her face.
Neela and Clockwork Clockla.
Yeah, I'm gonna clock her face.
Yeah. And guess what? She straight up murders Arpeggio. She kills him in this game.
Isn't this a children's
yes!
game?
Yes! She's just, you're dead, bitch.
What?
He fucking dies. Oh, spoiler alert, Arpeggio fucking dies.
Arpeggio is dead.
Yeah. So.
This game is stressing me out.
Yeah, final fight occurs, which, weirdly enough, ends similarly to the final boss fight from the last game.
What?
Because you do end up going to this bird that is Clockwork, but it's Neela. You beat the shit out of the head, right?
Yeah.
So Murray lifts up.
Beat her head.
Yeah. Murray, when the bird lands, Murray lifts up the beak.
Okay.
Because there's a whole thing in the mouth that Bentley's bombs can destroy.
Yeah.
So he gets in there, it explodes, he grabs what needed to be grabbed in there, and then the bird mouth shuts.
Okay.
On him.
Oh, fuck.
Bentley.
Oh, no.
Breaking his legs.
Ah!
Yeah.
No, not Bentley! What the fuck?
Murray comes in, rips open the door, pulls him out, saves him.
He's a turtle!
Yeah. Yeah.
Why didn't he retract?
It was a surprise. He survives.
Okay.
He does. He ends up getting a wheelchair.
Fucking.
But, that's the end of the game.
This game.
It's a lot. Bentley fucking breaks his leg. Arpeggio dies.
Neela turns into Clockla.
Yeah.
Which is like the worst name ever.
It is. It's Clock-LA. Like, it's so stupid. I hate it.
Okay.
So, a lot of the settings in this game are phenomenal.
Okay.
The design, the layouts of the levels are all unique in their own way. And even from the ones where it's the same protagonist for the next one, It is a different, complete layout from the last level. So they went unique for each of them. Yeah, it's the same theme, technically.
Okay.
But, and same enemies. But the entire layout is different. So the best example I can give is for the two Rajan ones.
Mm-hmm.
You're in India, and there's his temple, the guardhouse, and just, the castle walls, essentially.
All right.
And then you go to the next one, The Predator Awakes, and you're literally deep in the jungle, and there's just, a elephant-headed temple on the back, rock wall.
Okay.
So it's, two very different layouts and scenes, But same theme, if that makes sense.
It kind of does.
Yeah, because you're still in India, so it matches the iconography of all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, while they're all unique and, honestly, I could talk about how much I love all of them And really go into depth on why they're all great, but if I had to choose one favorite setting and layout-wise, it would have to be Chapter 5, A Tangled Web.
Okay.
This, just to refresh, is where Contessa and Neela are going at it.
Yes.
There's the assault on the castle. The style is still very gothic, because she's a spider, all of her...
Sounds like my style, yeah.
So, when you first meet the Contessa, it's a giant prison, Alcatraz-looking style, and then just, a town below it.
Mm-hmm.
This one is a castle, and then moat, bridge, and then city.
Oh, shit, okay.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's, I mean, fucking, there's a castle.
That's why it's so cool.
That's not the main reason I love it, though. So, what sets this apart from the other episodes, especially from the last one, is there's a large moat in the middle that you can't get across right away. Mm-hmm. So you have to, fucking find your way across, whether that be on boats or this long line that goes across.
Alright.
Yeah, on the side that there's the safe house, your safe house on.
Yeah.
There's essentially a paramilitary setup.
All right.
This game was somehow, the creators were somehow able to make a level that put together a super gothic castle and tanks. And it doesn't feel weird.
What?
It works.
Oh.
Yeah, it's ooh, castle, ooh, spooky. Fucking military.
That's random as shit. All right.
But they made it work.
Okie dokie, then.
And it's so fucking weird.
It's just one of those, like, all right.
Yeah. I'll make it there, like, soon, because I'll be going back to play it soon enough. And once I make it there, I will show you what I mean.
Please and thank you.
Yeah. All right, so my favorite boss, on the other hand, is not the Contessa, because I just fucking hate her. I will say this time, unlike last game, I cannot stick to one boss, because there are two that are just phenomenal in my mind.
Okay.
The first being Dimitri.
Yeah, you like him a lot.
Yeah, because while the boss fight isn't super difficult, it's actually really easy. You just kind of beat the shit out of him, and you're all going around this map, and he just teleports, shoots shit at you.
Yeah.
Pretty simple. The song that he has.
That disco jam.
Is what makes him an amazing boss.
We'll tag it, probably, with the Spotify link.
It's not on Spotify.
We can tag it with the whatever link we find it with.
Yeah.
YouTube.
The second favorite boss actually has a legit good set of fights, because you know, do the one where you have to go around into the trains, and then also the lumberjack games, and that's Jean Bisson.
I mean, that would be fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, even though the, what is it? Not the trope tree.
Stereotype.
The bashing of stereotypes is just...
Yeah. Also, his name.
Jean just, Bisson.
He's a Canadian buffalo. Like, come on.
Fucking hell.
I am too bi to not love this pun. Because bisexuals love puns.
Okay.
And so, just Jean Bisson. John Bison.
Yeah.
Canadian buffalo. So, of course, he's French. Bisson, love it. It's too fucking good.
I don't know how that's a pun, but okay.
It, well, it's a play on the name,
that's
so.
That's fair.
Yeah. All right. So, I will say this game was my favorite growing up.
Yeah.
Because the story kept me interested all the way through, which, being a kid, keeping attention is a difficult thing to do.
Yeah, any kind of interest is hard.
Exactly. So it also holds so much replayability.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, you can finish the mission, but you can go back to every single episode and just do what you want. Need to steal some more stuff? Sure, go for it. Want to fight a ton of enemies at once? Hell yeah. It's just a really good game.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And I know I mentioned Dimitri being a favorite boss because of his song. This is something we need to discuss.
Okay.
Like, I want y'all to look this up. Like, we will put it in there.
Yeah.
It is a disco funky nightclub song. It is perfect. It is the best boss song ever in any game. I will stand by that.
It's a disco funky boss.
Yeah.
Okay.
You go through different parts in this episode where, one, you have to follow him.
Yeah.
And that song's playing. You go into the nightclub, any one of the different areas, and you can hear that in the background.
Okay.
Also, it's like at one part randomly during the song, he just goes, "Let's dance!" Like, it's good. And that's all I needed to discuss about that song. It is probably my top favorite video game boss song.
Okay.
Yeah. Even more so than the Abyss Watchers.
That says a lot.
Yes. So, overall, this game is much better than the first.
Mm-hmm.
Because they kept what was good with the first one and then revamped literally everything else. The story is engaging and it flows well.
Mm-hmm.
And it still feels great. It does, of course, look better due to the remaster, but the feeling never changed when they did the remaster. The controls are smooth.
Mm-hmm.
It plays exactly the same. Maybe it's a little smoother, but they didn't change anything in the remaster.
Okay.
It still feels the same. I will say the only reason I'm not giving it a perfect 10 is because they doubled down hard on the two episodes per bad guy theme.
Yeah.
They tripled down on it.
Oh, that's too much.
Because it's Rajan.
Yeah.
He has two missions. Contessa has two missions. And Jean Bisson has two missions.
Yeah.
So.
That's a lot.
it works for the game, but it's kind of like, oh, that seems like a cop-out, you know?
Yeah.
Because Dimitri only gets one, and so does Arpeggio. Why didn't they all get two?
That's because Arpeggio dies.
So, well, yeah. Like... it's in the description of that episode, it says, the main antagonist here is briefly Arpeggio. It's like, yeah, very briefly. He fucking gets murked. Immediately.
That's terrible. It's terrible, but it's funny.
Yeah.
It's like, he's briefly alive.
Yeah. So, it did extend the game, but seeing the same boss twice in a row was weird, in a way, you know?
Yeah.
It was just like, okay, it makes sense with the flow. Rajan, they probably could have done two separate people. Contessa made sense.
Mm-hmm.
Jean Bisson, I don't think you needed to stay in Canada that long.
Sorry, I just thought of the dads. You don't need to stay in Canada that long.
But, like, they also semi-made it work because, one, you're doing the trains, that's his whole thing, old technology. Then you have to fight him in lumberjack games. It's just a weird mix, you know?
Fair enough.
Yeah, so, solid 9.5.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. It's only not perfect because I feel like they did a cop-out.
I mean, fair. A lot of
and
that...
And yes, it was 2004.
But still!
Yeah.
Okay, even that, like, all of that stressed me out 98%.
Yeah.
I was like, mother, what's next now?
Yeah, the what's bird next? Dies, that's what's next.
The bird dies, that's what's next. Stressing out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... I'm just stressed out now.
Yeah, but it's a great game. I love it, and I still was enjoying playing it.
Get to go play a doubleheader after this.
Yeah, I will say, the Contessa, her missions are kind of eh at best.
That's fair.
But, I mean, the setting makes up for the missions.
True.
In the one where there's the tanks, it's...
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, you get to, like, go collect ghosts from, like, tombs. You get to go in there and steal ghosts. And then, like, drop them in somewhere.
Oh, where's Daniel with the trope tree bat?
Yeah. Oh, spooky gothic castle. Gotta have ghosts.
Gotta have ghosts.
But they didn't throw in the trope tree with tanks there, so.
It's just so weird.
There's like three tanks just going around the whole thing.
I'm just perpetually confused. Anyway.
Yeah.
We should probably wrap this up.
Yeah, we should.
Last little bit of announcement before I actually forget. Because we are getting married, we decided to release a his/her/their
Page Turner
and Button Masher, respectively, t-shirt to commemorate our nuptials.
Yeah, so it says his Page Turner, her Page Turner, his Button Masher, her Button Masher.
And as then... well as there and there.
Yes, exactly.
So their Page Turner and Button Masher, because we are friendly to the non-binary babies.
And gender fluid and all the fucking everything. We love, and we... I'm not great at, like, the whole pronouns thing.
Yeah.
Tell me what you prefer, and I will gladly be like, you want to be called they? Sure, they. Oh, you identify as a woman? You're a woman.
Yeah, we're happy to oblige.
Yeah.
That being said, we also released a very, 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 very late, permanent pride.
Which I will be t-shirt. Buying.
Yeah. And, yes, there is a white border because it's supposed to look like it got painted on.
Yep.
And it has our logo, and a portion of the proceeds will go to the Trevor Project, and that is a permanent installation.
Yes.
That's not just for Pride Month, that's an all-around thing, because we truly believe here as... two not straight people in a straight marriage believe that love is love no matter what.
Yes.
100%. So just because we're in a straight marriage doesn't change who we are. Doesn't also.
Technically, we're in a gay marriage because we are not straight, both of us, but.
That's not what it means.
We're in a heterosexual marriage.
Yes.
Hetero? Yes.
Yes. That is straight. He got so confused. Anyway, that being said, they'll be on our TeePublic. They'll be in our links below. Don't forget to follow us on all of our socials.
Yes,
please tell your friends about us.
If you think they'd like an episode.
Or two.
Or two. Just be like, yo, just send them that episode. Yeah.
this is who we are. This is what we love to do. We love to bring you books. We love to bring you games. We love to take the work off your hands if we so inclined.
Yeah, if there's a game that you've been thinking about and you're just like, man, I don't have time to play it, fucking throw it down in the like email or whatever, or any comment of
tag post. Us in something.
Tag us in something. Tell us what you want, like, to read, us to read or play.
Yeah.
We haven't asked that in a while.
Nope, we have not. Suggestions are always open and we're always taking them.
Yes, exactly. So if there's a game that you're thinking, man, I don't have time to play that, let me know. I will gladly do that.
Yep, or if there's a book that you want me to read that you really just don't have time to read, or if you just think that it would be magnificent and would everybody in the world to know, tell me. I'd gladly read it for you guys. And if I can't finish it, I'll let you know that too.
Yes.
I have a bad attention span. With that, all of our links will be down in our
link tree,
and all of our sources will also be linked in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And thanks, guys, again. So keep
great
on...
episode.
Yes, I love this one. Keep on doing those pages
and mashing those buttons.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.